Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
Good evening. You are listening to Love Sport Radio and me, Matt Beadle, with you through to 11 p.m. this evening. Plenty coming up over the course of the next few hours on our Friday night fan show special. But right now, of course, it is the boys from Leeds, the Leeds United fan show. We got plenty coming up for you. Of course, I'm here with John McKenzie from All Stats, aren't we? How on earth are you, my friend?
I'm all right.
Are you good?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay.
I've just eaten a really nice chicken club sandwich, so I'm feeling quite pleased with myself.
Not just your cornflake clusters.
No, I'm going healthy this episode.
Okay, but they're in the studio, so we will be tucking in to those. We're going to be talking to Dave Featherstone, Bristol City fan, later on. We've got listener questions. We're going to be reflecting on that draw with Brentford as well. Delighted to say I'm also joined in the studio by Nat Dufton. Hello.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm very good, thank you. And how are you?
Yeah, very good. Happy Valentine's Day, everyone.
Yes, I was going to say, we're all here, aren't we? All nice and chirpy.
We're all Leeds, yeah.
My main love in my life.
I can't think of anything better to do on Valentine's Day than sit in a room with you guys and talk about Patrick Bamford's finishing percentages.
His prowess, his expected goals deficiency, I suppose you would say. Daniel Moroney, hello too. Great to have you on the show.
Yeah, good to be here.
Good, good. We're going to start with the opening stat, of course. John, please.
So I've got a stat from the Brentford game, because if you watch that game, you will know that Leeds pressed Brentford fairly relentlessly. Brentford's highest passing completion percentage for their back four was only 64.7%. And between them, that's Brentford's back four, they lost possession 56 times during the game.
Wow. That is a lot.
It is a lot, yeah.
So I was at the game on Tuesday.
A
few things to take from the game. First,
you weren't that impressed with Leeds, were you?
No, that's inaccurate.
Really?
Yes.
The texts that I got from you were
no.
But
I knew you were going to try and hang me out to dry on that. And when I sent the message, I thought, should I send this? Will this come back to bite me in the backside, gents? Now, it wasn't that I wasn't impressed with Leeds. I didn't think it was a great game of football. I'm not going to lie to you. I thought it was pretty poor. The first half, I thought, wasn't good whatsoever. And I think that's because my expectations were, from what I've seen from both teams this season, was that it was going to be a really decent, free-flowing game of football. Now, it wasn't that at all. Brentford were very, very poor, and they'd be the first to hold their hands up and say that they were very, very poor. From what it saw, for the first time that I've seen Leeds live this season, in terms of actually in the flesh, and we've spoken about this many times before, Leeds are very quintessentially Leeds. Right, and I've argued this before that Bielsa sometimes can't take it on to that next level, and I know I'll be, you know, batted back for that. But my issue in the game was that with all the possession, and all the passing that Leeds produced, gents, there were no real clear-cut chances. And this is where John sort of had a bit of a go at me and said, what game were you watching? But, yes, there was a chance with Costa that was tipped over by David Raya. There was the moment where Jack Harrison seemed to run from one end of the pitch to the other and should have pulled off a better strike. But apart from that, I can't think of another chance that Leeds had, bar the goal, where they could have potentially scored.
I think there were two more. There was I was also at the game. I was in line with our goal in the second half. Costa had one where he broke through and he kicked it right at the keeper. And it's any decent finisher would have buried that. And there was a Bamford one where the ball came in and he jumped for it. And if he just stood planted with his feet on the floor, he would have just like nodded it in. It would have been brilliant. But he jumped. He sort of did like a semi jump, and it meant he just put it over the bar.
Yeah, that was a kind of Bamford half chance, but for anyone else, it's kind of...
Yeah, you bury
it's
it.
It's good at doing that, isn't it? Yeah.
I will say before the game, now, I asked you before you came in about a specific chant. Now, there was a great moment, right? And people go, oh, God, this is good. This is what you took from the game. But Brentford, obviously, the players walk out to Hey Jude, and that's the big thing. Na, 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 Brentford. That was going on, but
that's
Leeds...
That's rubbish, isn't it? Let's be honest.
Yeah, yeah, it's rubbish. So drone. It's one of those so drony ones. Like, Liverpool, when the... just the one song that you got, horrendous. And it did feel like that at Griffin Park. I didn't think the atmosphere was great, but from the Leeds travelling support, of course, it was absolutely brilliant. But there was a moment where they were playing that music out constantly over the tunnel, as they do to get the fans going. But Leeds were singing the Leeds are going to the Premier League. And it became a wonderful harmony of both of them. It was absolutely brilliant.
Not a cacophony.
No, not a cacophony. No, sadly not. But a good moment that was, at least. The result, gents, let's get your views and your opinions on the result.
Is that literally all you enjoyed?
Sorry? No, it wasn't, but that was a moment that I enjoyed. We're going to get onto the post-match presses as well afterwards. You won't be happy with what I've got to say about that.
No.
But, yeah, the result in general, happy, not happy, what do you think?
Happy to stop the rot, really.
Yeah?
Get a point, yeah. Yeah, it's been going so badly lately. I think we were kind of, everyone was expecting kind of Brentford to kind of, maybe not turn us over, but certainly kind of get on the front foot. And I think we kind of, seem to stand up to it well, and I'm pretty happy with it, to be honest. Yeah,
I take it. Although we did dominate the game, so I think we deserved to win it if we'd taken it. Their only chance was the one we gave them. Like, they didn't have, like in the second half, they didn't have a shot on target. So
Two chances outside the box. That was it. Yeah,
I definitely think we could have. It's another one of these games we could have won it, but we didn't. But I will very much take a point at Griffin Park. We struggle there and have done forever.
Yeah, I thought it was a good result, and it was just a game where we felt as though we controlled it again, and I think a lot of that was down to the fact that we had Calvin Phillips, who is a great player, but is also better than like Stuart Dallas, and so you sort of have the swing from like having Stuart Dallas in midfield to having someone like Calvin Phillips is just massive, and it's just nice to feel as though the game is being controlled, and we're only going to give up chances that are mistakes, which is still happening. But I think there was a period in our poor run where it just felt as though we weren't even controlling games, so we lost our upside. So it's quite nice to feel as though we're maybe inching back into the driving seat.
Great to see Calvin Phillips diag in the flesh, by the way. How many did he want to do on Tuesday night? It was incredible.
Yeah, he's like the young Wayne Rooney reborn, isn't he?
Yeah.
I think, look, there's going to be a lot of conversations about whether or not Calvin Phillips should be playing in the England setup anytime soon. What was your opinion of Phillips, just seeing him live?
Yeah, well, he was actually the player above anyone else really on the pitch that I was paying close attention to because of all the chat around him. And I was pleasantly surprised. I thought it was very, very good. Quite clearly, I'm not going to say head and shoulders above everybody else on the pitch because he wasn't. I think that's being too extravagant. But he did have the ability, you could always tell, to go that level above. And so comfortable on the ball. A very good player. Is he ready for Euro 2020? Is he ready to be called up to England yet? I don't know. But I think I'm saying that with that horrendous Premier League specs that everybody seems to do, because if you'd said that about Mason Mount last year, he had a couple of games in the Premier League and boom, he's in the England squad. Mm-hmm. So if it was the same for Calvin Phillips, I wouldn't surprise. Imagine if Leeds go up and Calvin Phillips plays like he is now for the first month of the Premier League, he will be a shoo-in for the England side.
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. And we've been saying that he's better than Declan Rice. Would you agree with that?
I don't know if I'd agree with that. I really rate Declan Rice. I think he's having a difficult season because of the responsibility as a 19-year-old lad that's being put on his shoulders in the West Ham midfield at the moment. I think that his Michael Carrick-esque way of playing football, which is what it's been for the first couple of seasons that he's been at West Ham, is now slightly evolving, and he's having to get involved in the game more, which I don't think is what his manager, what he perhaps would have wanted in his start to life as a West Ham midfielder. Is Calvin Phillips better than Declan Rice right now? No, but I don't think they're identical footballers as things stand.
It's interesting, isn't it, that Declan Rice is a youngster playing in the Premier League and therefore deemed England ready, and Calvin Phillips is whatever age he is, 23?
23, yeah.
Yeah, and isn't considered England ready. I think that that's to England's detriment. I don't follow England, but I think the setup that they have is poor, that it's so obviously a filter. That if you play in the Premier League, you're considered good enough to play for England, and if you don't, then you're not. And I think it's probably to the detriment of... I mean, the Championship is the sixth best league in the world, pretty much, and we treat it as though it's like the first best of the second divisions in the world, and that's just not true. There's a wealth of talent in there, and it's a shame that we don't get to see more of it on show.
I think Calvin should definitely go to the Euros. I think, first of all, for us, it would be fantastic to see a Leeds player back in the fold with England. But in games, he can offer something that's a bit different to Declan Rice. And say, for example, we go out there and Declan Rice picks up a knock in the first game, all of a sudden you don't have any specialist defensive midfielder in the England squad. Whereas to take Calvin with you and have him built in to the squad, I think it would be very beneficial.
Okay, moving on to Kiko Casilla. Love that chant, by the way. A lot of time for that.
Kiko Casilla. They go on for ages as well.
Last
season, I was at a game where it went on for about 15 minutes. I kid you not, solid.
Really?
Amazing, amazing chant.
Really good acoustics at Griffin Park as well, so that one really stuck out. Daniel, Kiko Casilla, right in front of the Leeds fans, under the foot, Saïd Benrahma, a tap in. It is another error.
It is. Enkelman-esque, I believe. Mm.
So where are we? I know that Marcelo Bielsa has come out and said, yep, he's definitely playing on Saturday. What's the fans' opinion now on Casilla?
It's pretty split. Well, not split. It's pretty keen, pretty keen on getting him out of the team, I think.
Yeah,
and blooding Meslier before the inevitable of
ban. Who knows? Who knows what's happening? No one knows. There's no communication.
Yeah, but he's probably in for a ban in the next... Well, we don't know.
Well, they announced that the trial is taking place in the next few weeks, so we'll know sooner rather than later. But I think my position on the Kiko Casilla thing is, I think people get carried away with this mistake because this is like he's never going to make that mistake in a Leeds shirt again. It's a one in a career like mistake, right? Where you just lose concentration, you let it under your foot, and then slip. He could even perhaps have made a decent attempt at saving it had he not lost his footing. But like, he's never going to do that again. He's never done it in his career before. It doesn't represent some kind of like falling off a cliff in terms of his abilities. For the first 21 games of the season, he was pretty much the best keeper according to most of the stats. In the last 10 games, he's been the worst, and that's the issue. Like, what do you do in that scenario? You've got a keeper who's been the best in the league, now is the worst. Do you just drop him and move him on? I think the only thing you could point to where he deserves to have been dropped is in terms of his concession rate. He is conceding way too many chances on target. That's the issue. Him letting the ball under his foot isn't the issue. So I'm kind of like, I can see why Bielsa would keep him in. I can see why that event in particular wasn't enough to push Bielsa beyond, because if Bielsa's happy playing him, making those sorts of, like, he, for a six game period, he conceded something like 76% of his shots on target, which is wild, like incredible to concede that amount. And that's the issue. That's why we're losing games, because we're conceding way too many goals as the result of shots on target rather than like mistakes that have led to a shot on an open goal. So that's my position. I kind of think, fine, if we brought in Meslier, that would be okay at this point. But I also think he cares about the psychology. I think he thinks if he knows or has a good idea that Casilla is going to get a six-game ban in the next 2 or 3 weeks, he has the option where he could just drop him straight out 2 games before he goes into that ban, and then have the player thinking, oh, I'm not good enough, have confidence issues, and then have Meslier come in, and then have the issue at the end of that spell. What do I do? Do I bring a Casilla who's lost confidence, or play Meslier? What if Meslier plays badly in that 6 games, etc.? So I think what Bielsa wants to do is keep him in as long as possible, get to this ban, and then we go from there and see what it is. So you don't want to make the Meslier games have any sort of like edge to them. You don't want them to have a narrative behind them where people are like, oh, if he's not good enough, then we're screwed because both of our keepers are bad. So I think that Bielsa is saying this is a mistake, which is like a one in a career mistake. You're not going to do that again. I don't think we need to worry about that. For the rest of the game, he was fine.
Yeah, he was comfortable with his feet too, I have to say. He was welcoming the ball to his feet despite all the jeers from the crowd. Sometimes you wonder whether it's worth to make an error like that in front of your own fans or the opposing fans. Because even though you'll get pelters from the opposing fans, you kind of think, my own fans are behind me here. They're just thinking, oh God, this is horrible. No one knows what to say.
Must be a horrible experience. Horrendous. It must be the loneliest position in a, yeah. On a football pitch when you do a mistake like that and you think, oh.
I may have joined in with a couple of them. Just because out of pure frustration, I was like, yeah, I'm just going to...
You were in the Brentford end.
I was spying.
Did you manage to contain yourself when you equalised?
I did. Yeah, I was fine. The four Norwegian blokes behind me didn't.
Really?
Yeah. It was quite quickly. I was like, oh, yeah, they're talking about Leeds. Quite like, oh. Yeah. And then they scored, and I sort of turned around and went, yes. I was like, oh, right, okay.
There were quite a few fielded about. I have to say, I sat next to a certain Jermaine Beckford, and he was certainly sort of fisting away underneath the seat with his excitement, of course, of Leeds United equalising. Speaking of equalisers, Wayne Routledge has equalised for Swansea against Hull City. Hull City took the lead through Leonardo De Silva, but Wayne Routledge equalising in that Championship clash. Leeds United fan show here on Love Sport. Plenty more coming up.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
It's the Leeds United fan show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with John McKenzie from All Stats, aren't we? Nat Dufton and Daniel Moroney joining us in the studio too. Bit of news, of course, that we have to bring you that has come to light over the past couple of hours, and that is that Manchester City have been banned from European club competition for the next two seasons after being found to have committed serious breaches of UEFA's club licensing and financial fair play regulations. They've also been fined €30 million, which, give or take a few million, I guess equates to somewhere between 23 and 25 million. But massive news, huge implications for the Premier League, huge implications on who goes into the Champions League and the Europa League. Of course, we don't know the exact intricacies behind what will happen with the fifth place and the eighth place in the Premier League, but that is massive news to come out of the adjudicatory chamber of the club financial control body. And City, of course, will be appealing, and they've already released a statement pretty much condemning the decision. They said they expected it, but they have condemned it. Just, we won't dwell too much on this, gents, but as fans of a Championship club and as fans of a club who were fined last season for breaches, apparently, with Spygate, etc., etc., what do you make of this one?
I'm well on board with the Sheffield United Barmy Army in Europe next season. Overlapping centre halves at the Nou Camp, I'm in. Well, I think the rules are in place for a reason. You look at what's happened with Saracens this season in the rugby, in the Premiership, and I think, yeah, the rules are there. If you're going to break them, then you should get caught and you should get fined. You look at the teams that have done it in the Championship and have faced the strong sort of financial pressures that come with that. I agree completely, yeah. If you break the rules, you should get done.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough, although this still has to go to the Court of Arbitration for Sport, so... Let's wait and see what happens there.
Yeah, let's wait and see what happens. They do have previous, and they managed to strike some sort of deal, didn't they, back in 2014, where they ended up being fined and not banned. So, yeah, you'd like to think maybe the powers that be at Leeds, at Manchester City, sorry, might be able to overturn this one. But Daniel, just to finish on the Brentford game, in the presses afterwards, it was quite noticeable that Marcelo Bielsa quite clearly said that he thought Leeds played better against Forest than they did against Brentford.
Yeah.
I mean, what are you making of this?
I can't agree with that. This is where we
oh my
fork
gosh.
In the road.
This is unbelievable. This is groundbreaking. A Leeds fan not agreeing with Bielsa.
Yeah. It's just not true, is it?
Why has he said it?
I think he's a bit of a contrarian, isn't he? He's trying to, like, you know, prod people a bit and say, like, oh, actually, you know, we are doing the right things in the games we're losing. He's trying to make a point of that. And then, yeah, he obviously thinks it's true on some level, but I just can't see it.
It's categorically not true, right?
No. Does it? That's, yeah.
it's an interesting one, isn't it? I've thought a little bit about this, and I do agree with Daniel that part of why he wants to say this is that he wants to say, look, we don't just view a game in terms of the result. We don't look at the Forest game and say, this is bad because we lost, and the Brentford game is good because we drew. I think that's his framework for approaching games is, did we do enough in the game to win? Did we create better and more chances than the opposition? And if he does that, and if Leeds go on to lose, I think he still considers it to be a good game. So it may simply be hyperbole in him basically emphasising that was the case. There was plenty of chances where Leeds could have beaten Forest alone. I don't know. Lewis Grabman's chance was pretty decent.
So
they
mental.
I haven't looked at the XG map for that, but they must have been pretty high up there. They must be pretty high up the chance of having won that game in terms of the XG. But I don't know. Again, it could come down to control. But again, I think we controlled the Brentford game as well. So I think I'm going to accept Daniel's explanation that Bielsa is simply doing it to basically make a point about how he views football.
Okay, another look as well at Jean-Kevin Augustin. He came on for Patrick Bamford. Watching Bamford as well was another interesting experience, just to see how much work he does, how much ground he covers, how much he stretched that Brentford back line. And the game did significantly change when Augustin came on. By the way, his first involvement was his wild, wild old hack at a ball. I think it was Janvier that he completely booted up in the air, accidentally, to be fair, but just trying desperately to get into the game. And as a side note, when you talk about big booties in football, you're talking like Branny Ivanovic levels of big booty from Jean-Kevin Augustin, by the way. That is, yeah.
It's Eden Hazard levels.
Yes, it's Eden Hazard. Yeah. That's a big bit of equipment to put into those shorts. But he came on, didn't do a hell of a lot.
No, he didn't do too much. Big booties. Vernon Nita, who played for us, he had quite a sizable rear from memory. He didn't do loads, and actually,
Nat's got his phone out with just pictures of Vernon Nita. Yeah,
definitely. There's a Twitter platform there, surely.
Footballers' bums. Yeah,
it's another award at the the end of year awards thing.
I actually thought we lost a lot of our attacking threat when Bamford went off. I thought the link-up play he did, and as I was mentioning, as we were just off, when we were attacking down the right in the second half, he was right in front of me, so I could see when he drifted out to the right, and I thought he played brilliantly. And it almost made me think if Bamford could almost slot into the team as a right winger. And you could put Augustin up front as the lone striker.
All right, Tony Pulis. What is this?
Two strikers, one of them's a wide man. Nice wide target, man, yeah.
Not the way you want to see Leeds United playing, John?
I think that Patrick Bamford was brilliant against Brentford. Again, obviously you always have the narratives in the back of your mind, and you know that the fan base are just waiting for him to miss a decent chance because it confirms what you want to say. But I've been saying it all along. If he could finish, he'd be an excellent player.
Part of the problem, though, isn't it? And this is what Dave Anderson was saying last week on the show, that he actually thinks it's more a case of just quality with Bamford.
Yeah, no, it certainly is. And look, we've talked a lot about the received wisdom in analytics about finishing as a skill, and it's just really hard because he seems to be the exception that proves the rule. And it's getting to a point, like, for almost no one else, there seems to be this quality, which is finishing pretty much. Like, everyone seems to sort of roughly conform to their XG, but this season, Bamford just seems so far off it that you just got to think, well, maybe we do just push him out. But I think we'll continue with Bamford there, and I think it'll be fine until we get JK to a level of fitness where you can just play him from the start. But we wait and see what happens. But I'm disappointed that no one else seems to be taking up JK as the name for Jean-Kevin, but there we go.
Jean-Kevin.
It's red vin, isn't it? Vin.
Oh,
wine.
Okay.
Wine.
That's fine.
Jean-Kevin.
It's Big Kev.
It's
when I think Dallas said immediately, yeah, Big Kev. I was like, okay, right, I'm in with that. That's brilliant.
Could be Chunky Kev.
Oh,
at the moment.
You hadn't entirely finished your point, Nat.
So I thought he did look good, but again, quite raw to our system. And he does offer something that Bamford doesn't, which is he just hits it with power. And I just
he does look like he wants to hit everything,
yeah, just,
right?
Just
which
like,
is
just
quite
put,
nice.
Put your foot through it. And yeah. I think he does that in a way that Bamford doesn't. And if you look at other successful finishers in this league in previous seasons, you know, Billy Sharp's, your Tammy Abrahams, being able to just smack it is a skill, and get yourself in a position to just bury it. And,
it's almost like he's coming to the club and they've been like, the reason we brought you in is to be a good finisher. So he's like, right, I'm just going to try everything here. I've got to score, basically.
He's taken pressing forward completely to heart.
But we talked about this a little bit with David last week as well, the fact that Brentford take into account a player's ability to strike a ball cleanly, but also their willingness to take it early. And we don't have many of those sorts of players in the club, so it's nice to have someone who looks as though they are goal hungry in that regard. And hopefully tomorrow it will come off and he'll get a chance to actually score.
Yeah, let's hope so. And a smacker. It's like those old school footballers. Remember, Mark Hughes was a really good volleyer of a ball. Tony Yeboah. That's the better example there. Sorry, yeah. I named the wrong player there, haven't I?
You've gone wild.
But players with those certain characteristics don't really exist as much in today's game. Daniel, I want to come to you with the news, of course, that Adam Forshaw is now going to be ruled out until the end of the season. Surgery was obviously trying to be avoided because they knew that would end his season. He's now going to go out to Colorado, I think it is, to have the surgery. But a big miss?
Huge, yeah. I think it's really big. I think when Phillips was missing, you could tell that there was no one to really step in and and replace him directly. And so what happened was we shift the team around. Ben White goes into midfield, Ayling goes to centre-back, and then we've got Alioski and Dallas as the wing-backs, and everyone has to move because one very important piece is missing. If Forshaw's in, he just slots in, and we play in exactly the same way, and I think we have a bit more success in the three games that Phillips was missing. So yeah, it's huge. Yeah,
Forshaw, gents?
I'm very sad because Forshaw is my favourite player, and I'm pretty sure he's the best player in our squad at the moment, but most Leeds fans wouldn't agree with that. So I'm devastated. Yeah, I've been crying all week.
Oh, okay. Well, on that note, we'll move quickly on this, the Leeds United fan show. Next up, John and I, earlier on today, spoke to Dave Featherston, big Bristol City fan.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Love Sport Radio, the station giving fans a voice.
Yep, it's the Leeds United fan show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, John McKenzie from All Stats Aren't We, Nat Dufton and Daniel Moroney join us in the studio too. Just to remind you of the news that Manchester City have been banned from European club competition for the next two seasons. They've been found to have committed serious breaches of UEFA's club licensing and financial fair play regulations. Huge implications for the Premier League, that one certainly has. And two teams looking to get into the Premier League at the end of this season are Leeds, of course, and Bristol City, who travel to Elland Road this Saturday. A repeat of the opening day fixture where Leeds went to Ashton Gate and thumped the Robins 3-1. Now, contrasting fortunes for both teams since then. After those seven successive wins for Leeds, it is two wins in 11. Bristol City, conversely, had managed just one win in six around a month ago. They've now won 4 in 5. Fortune certainly turning upwards for Lee Johnson's men. They are 3 points adrift of Leeds, despite being in seventh place in the Championship. That is just how close it is right now. Earlier on, John and I caught up with Dave Featherston, big Bristol City fan, about the game and how he thought it was going to go.
I think it's going to be a tough game. Leeds is not a happy hunting ground for us. So I think it's going to be a tough one, although saying that our away form is better than our home form, so that kind of gives us all a bit of hope as we travel north for the weekend.
Yeah, you're bang on. Not a great hunting ground, like you said. Lost 7 of your last 8 away games at Leeds in all competitions. Not since 1979 have you last won there.
know, it's a long time. It's a long time. I think, you know, some of our fans still have to go back to, I think it was 1974. It's a bit before my time, when we beat you in the FA Cup. But yeah, that's 40 odd years ago. Although 1979 was probably about the first time that I saw Leeds at home at Ashton Gate. So yeah, I've been supporting them for quite a while.
Just a question about your form. You sound a little bit hesitant about coming up to Leeds, but Bristol have had a great run of form recently. Are you feeling positive about the team at the moment?
I think so. I think we've had a lot of injuries at the start of the season. I know everyone makes that excuse, but we did, and we lost to Phoebe when we were in good form as well, which didn't help. And then over kind of the early kind of autumn and winter, we kind of changed formation from kind of predominantly being a back to a back four, and I think it's taken a bit of time to settle into that. And even in the last few weeks, a bit more of a going back to perhaps being a bit more resolute and playing a little bit more on the counter-attack, certainly away from home, and that's kind of served us quite well. And I think that's probably the reason those fans travelling. If we can keep it tight, we're capable of scoring on the break. Goals haven't really been a problem for us all season, but keeping them out of the other end to be exposed, and that's probably the danger going to a side like Leeds, who, if they do pen us back, we'll struggle to get out. So that's the bit of the worry, and that's why I'm a bit hesitant.
So you've got two new signings from January in the January transfer window, Naki Wells, Filip Benkovic, both of them scoring at the midweek. You happy with those two players?
Yeah, absolutely delighted. I think we knew we were going to lose Brownhill, so kind of priority one has always been this proven goal scorer, and I think in Naki Wells we've got that. I think he's a player that a number of us have liked for a long time, and to finally kind of get him is a real big boost. I think he's proven that in making his kind of full debut on Wednesday against Derby, just gave us that something different, that sharpness in the 18-yard box that we've been so after since we lost to Phoebe to injury early on the season. Benkovic, probably don't know an awful lot about him, apart from the obvious YouTube clips you look at when someone signs. But he looks a big, strong boy. Had a bit of a hesitant debut last week against Birmingham. But even in that kind of 25 minutes that he played, he looked a real threat in the opposition box and kind of proved that on Wednesday night against Derby, popping up to head home from a corner. And he'd also had a header kind of over the bar about 5 minutes before that as well. So he looks a useful player in both boxes. But I think for me that, with Brownhill going, the real key was to get someone in midfield. Mm-hmm. And we've had some, nice ball-playing midfielders, nippy kind of midfielders. But we've missed that kind of strong man in the middle of the park. And we got Henriksen from Hull on loan as well. And I think he might end up being a really key signing for us. Looks like he can do a bit of everything as well. So I think in previous parts of his career, he's played kind of a more advanced midfield, and of late, when he has played at Hull, he's played more defensive, but he was kind of breaking through the thirds on Wednesday night and showing that he's got a good all-round game, even though he's not played since November, so not match fit yet. So, yeah, really encouraged by that. I think we went into the window thinking we're in the mix, and for me, we've come out the window looking stronger, so I think that's a real bonus for us.
One of the things that we cover a lot in this channel is the underlying statistics. And if you look at, I know we were just talking before we came on air, actually, that about whether or not fans care about the underlying statistics. If you're just there and thereabouts in the playoff places, who cares if you're overperforming your statistics? But if you look at an XG table, Bristol City in most models are bang bottom of the table. Do you think is that the sort of thing you worry about going into a playoff promotion push, basically, at the end of the season? Obviously, you've got to this point and it's been fine, but do you maybe worry that there are underlying problems that might come to the fore?
I think there are and there aren't. I think it's a bit of a kind of double-edged sword for us. I think we've changed a little bit the way we play. I know we have conceded quite a lot of goals, but in a lot of games, we don't concede many really good chances. Mm-hmm. So we kind of restrict teams to quite a bit of long-range chances, which we tend to get blocks in. We also are quite happy to let teams cross from the touch lines. So once again, we're normally quite good aerially in defence as well. So we don't give up many easy chances in the box, and I think that's been helpful at that end of the pitch. the way we kind of play with the ball, we're kind of a bit counter-attack in transition. Mm-hmm. And I think as a result, we tend to kind of create good chances when we do create them. So I think, you know, in terms of our conversion rates, I think our conversion rates are pretty decent. Mm-hmm. And that's really why we're up there. I think, kind of go back to the conversation about home form not being as good. I don't think that's because teams have stuck two banks of four behind the ball and, you know, and frustrated us. I just don't think we've played with a lot of pattern at home. And when teams have come at us, and Derby kind of got forward in numbers on Wednesday night, we were able to kind of get the ball, win it, you know, relatively high at the pitch, and then you know, make them pay. And we had a couple of really good opportunities in the last minutes to kind of extend the victory. But yeah, I think the XG is important. I think it shows what type of chances, but I think there's also a bit of context to it in terms of where those chances are coming from. So a bit worried, but also not overly concerned if we keep pushing teams wide and deep with their chances.
Dave, it's normally John's job to jump in with the stats, but I'm going to throw one at you too, because I'd like to hear your opinion on the goalkeeper, Dan Bentley. Of course, he came in from Brentford in the summer. He's received his plaudits and he's received some critics this season too. Just from looking at the table and the stats themselves, in terms of goals against, it looks like Bristol City have conceded more than any other team in the top 13. So going all the way down to Derby. Now, is that a reflection on Bentley? Is that a reflection on the way that Bristol City play? Is it a reflection on the defence as a whole? And are Bristol City fans happy with Dan Bentley's performance so far this season?
It's a mixed one, really. I think he was bought specifically because, you know, he's a, you know, well-respected keeper at this level. He's you know, young for a goalkeeper, so he was a good signing. I think a bit out of favour at Brentford, so I think it was a good positive signing to get him for the kind of money we did. Defensively, I think part of the problem is we've struggled to have a settled central defence all season. We've had Callas out, who was an absolute rock last season with Webster. And we've flitted between Baker through injuries as well. He's probably actually having his best little spell alongside Williams. We've had young Taylor Moore, who played the first game of the season against you and got bullied by Bamford, but has come back quite strong up until Christmas and now gone out on loan. So I think not having a settled defence in front of him hasn't helped. When he's been called upon to make saves, he's generally done pretty well. And I think, you know, he's certainly one-on-ones, he's been really good. And I think, you know, the fans have really taken to him as well. We had Nicky Mainpah last season. If there's one thing I'd say Mainpah probably edges him on, is kind of command of that six-yard box. And I think that's where we've been a little bit fallible. Although we've got some big defenders, we've not always looked that solid from crosses, certainly from the kind of set-piece areas rather than from open play. I'd rather he come out and, you know, cleared people out and punched it. But he tends to stay a little bit on his goal line and therefore kind of we invite a little bit of pressure through that. So definitely a positive, but probably that one final thing about, you know, command of his area is probably the one thing I'd perhaps be a little bit critical of. But, you know, certainly overall he's been an asset this season.
Your manager, Johnson, he's a bit of a persona non grata in Leeds. He's been in the media again this week saying that he would love to have Leeds in the playoff final. How do you feel about the fact that he's quite an abrasive character in terms of his media presence? Is that a problem for the club? Is that something that that a lot of the fans want to see less of, or is it something that actually the club uses as a way of sort of motivating itself?
I think he divides opinion from both our fans and opposition fans as well. I think he's really, really open, and I think he loves to talk. And in some ways, he probably says too much at sometimes, and perhaps, you know, perhaps needs to just have a little think before he says some of the things that he comes out with.
Don't we all?
Yeah. I think, you know, he is doing a decent job. You know, we're sat there in seventh, just outside the playoffs, you know, on goal difference, and yet, you know, there's a group of fans who'd probably like to see him out of a job, and that kind of just seems ridiculous, really, in the position we're in. But I think some of that is kind of personality. And I think, you know, deep down, he's a great guy. He's got Bristol City at heart. You know, he was here as a player under his father, and I think that might be some of the reasons why some fans haven't taken to him. but he genuinely has got Bristol City at heart. He's desperate to do well, and he's desperate to try and get us into the Premier League. And I think most fans who probably go to Bristol City and watch games probably feel positive about him, but there are extremes out there who are normally quite vocal on social media that, you know, perhaps get more airtime than probably amplifies what their feelings are about him. But no, he's doing a good job, and I think he's been given the tools in this transfer window to go and, you know, attack that playoff, those playoff places, and hopefully we'll get there.
Well, never mind the playoffs, Dave. I've got to say, when you look at the results, of course, this week, another bonkers week in the Championship. Both yourselves and Preston, 6th and 7th, just 3 points off automatic promotion places, just 3 points off Leeds United. You've got a set of 5 games now. Now, I know from now until the end of the season, every game is massive, but when you look at those next 5 games, Leeds to begin with, of course, tomorrow. Then it's West Brom, top of the table, West Brom. And at the end of that 5-game stretch, it's Fulham. So some big games coming up for Bristol City. Massive games that ultimately you need to win if you're going to remain in that playoff / automatic promotion push.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, nothing's going to be more truer than, you know, the 6-point game over that, you know, this coming, you know, month that we've got ahead of us. And I think because we're kind of the team attacking it from the bottom, I think there's an element that says, you know, let's not lose those games. But I don't think that's the way we can play. I know we can sop up a bit of pressure, but we've still got to go and attack as well. We're not a team who can just sit there for 90 minutes and defend and try and come away with a 0-0. That's not the way that's going to, you know, get us the results we need. And actually, I think because, you know, we're the kind of team that are likely to slip up against, you know, a lower place team, which is, you know, probably true of most teams in the Championship. You need to pick up the points where you can get them, and so I think, you know, we've got to try and go and win some of these games, and that might also give us a bit of a breathing space on some of the games where we don't perform.
Okay, so I'm going to push you, Dave. Lee Johnson, you know, John mentioned him there. He's only lost more games against Preston and Wolves apart from Leeds. So like you said, his record, well, Bristol City's record against Leeds isn't great. Lee Johnson's record against Leeds isn't particularly great. Big game coming up tomorrow, 3 p.m. at Elland Road. What is your prediction?
I think it's going to be a 2-2 draw.
Oh.
I think we are going to get something tomorrow. I think there's a bit of confidence going around the squad. And I think a few of them do sense that this is the opportunity to kick on. And probably, if ever there was a time to play Leeds, it's probably now in their current form. Although I did watch the game against Brentford the other night and I thought, one all certainly flattered Brentford. I thought Leeds were pretty good and got a way of playing. And hopefully Johnson's got something up his sleeve tomorrow that will mean that we can go there and take you on and give you a good old game.
Take you on and give you a good old game, said Dave Featherstone there of Bristol City. Big Bristol City fan. He's predicting 2-2. We're going to find out what the Leeds United boys are predicting for their game with Bristol City. Plus, we've got your listeners' questions next.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
It is the Leeds United fan show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with John McKenzie from All Stats, aren't we? Nat Dufton and Daniel Moroney in the studio too. We've got about 10 minutes to go, fellas. Slightly less, so we're going to rattle through these listeners' questions and then get your predictions for the game with Bristol City this weekend. First up on the listeners' questions, John, it is Billy Reid, and he has asked, if you could choose one player from another Championship club to play for Leeds, who would it be? Not John, not just the best player in the league, but a player who would perfectly solve a tactical problem we have right now, I think is what Billy Reid is asking.
Well, it sounds like Billy Reid to me. I think we talked about this before we came on air, and we decided that obviously a goalkeeper is a position that could be improved upon, but I'm not too bothered with having Meslier in. And then obviously people will want Patrick Bamford replaced, but we've got JK in, so that's not too bad. So I think we can consensus was that we needed a midfielder. Mm-hmm. So the question is which central midfielder we did take. We've talked about Conor Gallagher, but I think he could probably do a job as an eight, but he's a bit more advanced. I suggested What's it? Who did I suggest? Ovie Ejaria.
You're from Reading, yeah.
So someone who's going to be a decent eight ball carrier, also defensively decent. You wanted
Romain Sawyers. I think stats will probably back us up. You can tell me. Obviously, it's West Brom stats, but he's just a great passer of the ball, great controller. I think he ticks over what makes that West Brom midfield.
Mm.
Very creative passer, so I think he'd fit perfectly in that mould.
Daniel?
Yeah, I'd have Ejaria actually.
Yeah,
I think he's got a bit of unpredictability about him from what I've seen.
Two votes for Ejaria, a decent eight ball character. So likes his pull, does he? Yeah. Moving on.
That's what I said.
That was good. That was quick.
Yeah. Okay. Emilio Sanjueza has said, I saw the Argentina Brazil match from 1999 posted on YouTube by the lead supporter Juani Jimena, and that reminded me, Nat, when will we see the 3-3-1-3 again?
Well, I think we technically see it in transition during games. So it's not a case of us not playing it. It's a case of it's situational. And with the fact that we've been playing...
I'm beaming with pride.
John's just so happy.
It's some of them here. I just completely knocked me off. With the fact that we've been playing with sort of out-of-sorts players, like Ayling having to play centre-half recently, it has affected that slightly because you lose that kind of attacking fullback. But the way that we play it with Phillips dropping in to, from defensive mid into that... three when we attack and then we charge on the fullbacks and then the wingers cut in. None of you can see me moving my hands as I do all this. So yeah, I think we do play it quite a lot. And I think if you watch us play in transition, we do it. I assume every time we attack.
Quite regularly. Yeah. I mean when we say the 3-3-1-3, I guess that we're talking there more about like the defensive formation. So obviously Leeds play 4-4-1-4-1, and then as you say, the formation changes when we're going forward. But the 3-3-1-3 means that we would have that formation as a defensive lineup. So it's basically a back three. We actually saw it a lot in the November when we won all of our games that month, and I think we had 4 out of 5 games where we played 3-3-1-3, and as a result of that, I'm kind of surprised that we haven't seen it more. But that, again, we're only going to play 3-3-1-3 when we're playing against a team that plays two strikers, so we may see it tomorrow because Bristol City have been playing two strikers.
Okay, Daniel, moving on to you. This one is from Gabriel Dujiak. Sorry, Gabriel, if I haven't quite got that surname
There's
correct.
Some tricky names, aren't you?
Yeah. I know, I'll tell you what.
I thought you nailed the ones in the last one, though.
Thank you. Yeah. Daniel, can you compare Pablo 1920 to Pablo 1819, or the team with Pablo on the right against Pablo on the middle?
I can't do it statistically. I'm not the person to ask that. But I personally prefer him in the middle. I don't know if that tallies with his kind of outputs for being on the right versus the middle. I just think he's kind of better through the middle. We get a bit more control going through the middle, and then we've got Harrison and Costa out wide who are a bit more natural in the wings, although there's the argument we lose him cutting inside is kind of more of an inside forward, kind of driving into the box, whereas, you know, with wingers, you don't out and out wingers, you don't get that. So I'm not sure, but yeah, I prefer him in the middle, but I don't know if
I actually prefer him on the right. I don't know. Yeah. What about you, Matt?
I think the older he's got and the slightly slower, you can see he's getting a bit leggy these days. I think middle, like you're saying, suits him. But yeah, when we go back to him last season and the season before when he played on the right, that I loved that when he played that. It was fantastic.
He's a little bit more defensively solid, I think, than playing Costa there. And so I think part of the reason why we've lost control a little bit after, partly to do with foreshore, but also partly to do with the fact that we've started playing two out-and-out wingers has been because we don't get quite as much defensive coverage in that area.
His defending is really good. The slide tackles he does where he just
they're
he
awful.
He goes, I know, I love them. He goes full
body.
He
always misses
and he just nicks it away with the end of his boot.
He's trying to cover ground with sliding, isn't he? Yeah. He's trying to go block a zone.
I made an effort to defend.
The see? Sol Campbell where he just slides out of view. Of the
nice. Moving on, Joe Hill has asked, how many wins do you think we need to take us up? 2 points per game was always the benchmark, but now the league is so compact. Could 9 to 10 wins from the last 14 games do?
10. Yeah. 10, I think we're up.
Yeah.
10, and we were chatting about this before we came on air. I think we're saying 10 and 2 draws, which allows for 2 defeats, and we're in a really good position.
Yeah, it feels a lot tighter this year, but I reckon if we get the same amount of points we got last year, which I think was about 83 points, something would actually do second this year.
This also accounts for a drastic turnaround in form. Then, if we're taking 10 wins from the last 14 games,
well, we lose the next two, draw the two after that and then just win the rest to the final post. You heard it here first.
Okay, nice. Breaking news here on the Leeds United Fan Show. One more, because I like the name of this quizzer, is Brolin Ate the Pie. Brilliant. If Forshaw had been fit for the season, gents, would Costa ever have been more than the Hernandez understudy?
Oh, it's a good question, actually. I don't know. I suspect not, because he's our most expensive player in this squad. It's a question that we've kind of always wondered, given that what we said in the last answer, or the answer before about Pablo, that actually Pablo works quite well as an option on the right. I don't know. I suspect that we would have always had... I think we probably would have had a bit more rotation. Maybe Pablo wouldn't have played as much, or Pablo would have come in into a 10 or sat on the bench and then come into whatever position was deemed most dangerous for that game. But
and
I don't know.
Harrison might have played a bit less as well, maybe. He might have come in for Harrison. And I don't know. I've heard some things this week in kind of the argument that Costa should be on the left and Harrison on the right, or they should rotate a bit more, because we haven't really seen that this season. But yeah, it's... interesting.
Okay, well, gents, before you go, Bristol City up at the weekend. We heard from Dave Featherstone. He thinks it's going to be a 2-2 draw. Big Bristol City fan. Great record against Bristol City in recent seasons. Lee Johnson not with a very good record against Leeds. I'm going to go round the houses, as I always do. Daniel Moroney, what say you?
Well, my last prediction was 3-1, 3-1 win against Wigan, so I'm not sure I'm in any place to... But I'd go for 2-0.
2-0
solid
to Leeds.
2-0 home win based on nothing but blind faith.
Okay, a process trusting victory. Nice. Nat,
we were chatting off air and we've realized this is my fourth time on the show. We have not won a game after I've been on the show. We had the 3-0 draw against Cardiff, where I said we would capitulate. We had the loss against Fulham, where I said we'd lose. We had the loss against QPR, where I said we'd lose.
The QPR one,
so
I remember that.
I'm gonna say we're gonna win. I think we're gonna win 3-0. Yeah,
nice. Turning around, John McKenzie.
I think that we're going to win 2-1.
2-1 to Leeds. Yes. Nice. So wins all round here, gents. Love to hear it. This has been the Leeds United Fan Show on Love Sport. Thank you very much for coming in, as per gentlemen. We'll be back next week, 8 p.m, Leeds United Fan Show, with all the reaction to that victory three times over against Bristol City. See you then.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.